Blog Talk Radio.
Being used against the people on the earth. It's called the tar sands in Alberta.
and is causing lots of life, disease, and devastation on an unprecedented scale. You should also be forewarned that agents of this toxic wasteland are paying off members of Congress. Choose your allies wisely, for they too are guilty of this massive loss of life. Please act swiftly and decidedly. The fate of the Earth depends on it. And, you know, it's a huge show of chemical destruction.
Well,
yeah. That's the tar sands. This is an interesting one, too, which I thought was fascinating. That how the U.S. media suppresses chemical weapons attacks if they're done by Israel or if they're done by the United States or anybody who's an American ally, right? In this case, this is from the Cleveland Challenger. U.S. media suppressed the 2009 U.N. report showing Israel using chemical weapons against Palestinians. Obama ignores...
I guess that doesn't count.
No, right. Well, Obama ignores Israel's chemical weapons abuse while targeting Syrian government that may not be responsible for the recent chemical attack. In New York, few major mainstream American news outlets expose the sordid details of a 2009 United Nations UN fact-finding report that revealed how Israel's military illegally aimed chemical missiles at a United Nations Relief and Work Agency for Palestinian refugees in a 22-day invasion of the Gaza Strip that began in 2008 called Operation Cast Lead. As the U.S. and world media watched to learn if claims that President Barack Obama will execute a military strike against Syria without a vote of Congress or the support of Congress or the support of the U.N., the same media outlets are burying information that suggests preparation for war could be premature. Little media attention is being paid to claims from a U.N. commission that Syrian rebels, not government soldiers under President Assad's control, were responsible for recent chemical weapons attacks that killed over 300 Syrians. During our investigation for crime against humanity and war crimes, we collect some witness testimony that has made to appear that some chemical weapons were used, in particular nerve gas, said Carla Del Ponte, a member of the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Syria. What appears to our investigation is that this was used by the opposition by the rebels. It has no indication at all that Syria government has used chemical weapons. What also is questionable is why Obama has drawn a line in the sand over highly questionable allegations that Syrian soldiers use chemical weapons when the Israeli military was proven and officials have admitted to using chemical warfare to attack a United Nations relief compound. The facility provided shelter and medical attention to Palestinian refugees in 2009. Well, Cleveland Challenger obtained a copy of 575-page 2009 UN report that a fact-finding mission headed by ex-South African Judge Richard Goldstone prepared after an investigation of the events surrounding Operation Cast Lead. The Israeli missile and ground assault on Gaza Strip began on December 27, 2008 and ended on January 18, 2009. The attack resulted in an estimated 1,100 to 1,400 Palestinian deaths. 13 Israeli soldiers were killed. 4 died from friendly fire. Now, that's about the same number that were killed in Syria recently by the rebel forces. Okay, the Israeli missile and ground assault in Gaza Strip began on December 27, 2008 and ended in, I just read that. The invasion was stimulated by Israel's claims that rockets were being fired at Israelis by Hamas militants. 3 Israeli citizens and 1 soldier were killed by Hamas rockets in the days leading up to the assault and led to an estimated $1.3 billion in damages to Palestinian property and businesses. Israel's military was also accused by the UN fact-finding mission of violating war protocols by using Palestinians as human shields, murdering unarmed civilians, and destroying water and sewer treatment plants and wiping out food supplies and production facilities to starve the population. The UN Commission Goldstone led met The UN Commission Goldstone-led met extensively with Palestinian officials, victims, and survivors after the Israeli military assault. The interviews and investigations led to the discovery of information and evidence that Israel military deployment missiles containing white phosphorus against civilians and the hospital. White phosphorus is a highly combustible chemical agent that burns on contact with air. In humans, it burns upon contact with skin and creates very deep tissue wounds. It can also cause death when inhaled. If the customary use has been as a smokescreen, although it is illegal to use against civilians in time of war, the UN Commission found Israel's use of the burning agent against the hospital to be particularly deplorable. And this goes on quite a ways, and I'm going to leave it at that. But it's pretty
interesting. White phosphorus was used when Fallujah was attacked.
Exactly, sure. We've used it, and so have they. And, so many other chemicals, all right? And it's just a sick situation. I will read one other thing. It's reflected, Goldstone's opinion said it reflected that he'd only changed his mind about whether or not Israel intentionally targeted civilians on the 22nd day military invasion of Palestine. The allegations of intentionally by Israel were based on deaths and injuries to civilians in situations where our fact-finding missions had no evidence in which to draw any other reasonable conclusion. While the investigations published by the Israeli military and recognized in the UN committee report have established the validity of some incidents that we investigated in cases involving individual soldiers, they also indicate that civilians were not intentionally targeted as a matter of policy. But Goldstone also took the opportunity to balance a legitimate Israeli government complaint that his 2009 report concentrated the major of his criticism on Israel, made little or no reference to Hamas. It doesn't really matter. They used the damn stuff, all right? And then what happened was this guy got attacked by everybody, all right, and started to have to it happened, but I'm sorry that, I everybody's going to back down.
Yeah, watch myself.
When the Zionists come after you. This is an interesting thing about Obama. Obama is the worst president ever. Okay. Quit trashing Obama accomplishments. He has done more than any other president before him. He has an impressive list of accomplishments. First president to apply for college aid as a foreign student, then deny he was a foreigner. First president to have a social security number belonging to another man from a state he has never lived in. First president to preside over a cut to the debt rating of the United States. First president to violate the War Powers Act. First president to be held in contempt of court by illegally obstructing oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. The first president to spend $1 trillion on shovel-ready jobs when there were no such thing as shovel-ready jobs. The first president to abrogate bankruptcy law to turn over control of companies to his union supporters. First president to bypass Congress and implement the DREAM Act through executive fiat. The first president to order a secret amnesty program that stopped the deportation of illegal immigrants across the U.S., including those with criminal convictions. And first president to demand a company hand over $20 billion to one of his political appointees. You want to read the rest of that? First president to tell a CEO of a major corporation, Chrysler, to resign.
First president to terminate America's ability to put a man in space. The first president to cancel the National Day of Prayer and to say that America is no longer a Christian nation. First president to have a law signed by an auto pen without being present. First president to arbitrarily declare an existing law unconstitutional and to refuse to enforce it. The first president to threaten insurance companies if they publicly spoke out on the reasons for their rate increases. First president to tell a major manufacturing company in which state it is allowed to locate a factory. The first president to file lawsuits against the states he swore an oath to protect, Arizona,
Wisconsin,
Ohio, and Indiana, I guess. First president to withdraw an existing coal permit that had been properly issued years ago. First president to actively try to bankrupt an American industry, that's the coal industry. First president to fire an inspector general of AmeriCorps for catching one of his friends in a corruption case. First president to appoint 45 czars to replace elected officials in his office. First president to surround himself with radical left-wing anarchists. First president to golf 73 separate times in his first 2.5 years in office. 102 times to this date. First president to hide his medical, educational, and travel records. First president to win a Nobel Peace Prize for doing nothing to earn it. Oh, no, he went to war. First president to go on multiple global apology tours and concurrent insult our friends tours. First president to go on 17 lavish vacations, including date nights and Wednesday evening White House parties for his friend, paid for by the taxpayers. First president to have 22 personal servants, taxpayer-funded, for his wife. First president to keep a dog trainer on retainer for $102,000 a year at taxpayer expense. First president to fly in a personal trainer from Chicago at least once a week at taxpayer expense. First president to repeat the Holy Quran and tell us the early morning call of the Azan, Islamic call to worship, is the most beautiful sound on earth. First president to call the military men and women that they should pay for their own private insurance because they volunteered to go to war and knew the consequences. Thanks.
Then he was the first president to tell the members of the military that they were unpatriotic for balking at the last suggestion. First president to sign with a foreign nation over one of America's 50 states, Mexico versus Arizona. And how is Obama open change working out for you? That's fascinating, huh? So he's been one of the worst of the worst of the worst. So there you go, folks. Well, I wanted to read this. This came up recently. And USDA gives China green light to sell unlabeled meat in the U.S. Imagine that. Oh, God. Catching up to this news, which dropped quietly just before the holiday weekend, is a first. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has given permission for chicken products produced in the People's Republic of China to be sold in the United States without labeling that would indicate where the chicken products came from. The news was broken by Politico, whose writers obtained USDA documents before the agency released them, and then followed up by the New York Times with some no-holds-barred analysis by Bloomberg's Businessweek. If you've been reading for a while, you know that food safety in China is well below U.S. standards. Toxic vinegar, growing the dark pork, and more. So it may be a surprise to hear that birds grown and slaughtered outside of that country, but cooked and made into products in it, would be acceptable for sale here, especially since the plant that USDA has approved for sales into the U.S. market will not have USDA inspectors on site. Here's the USDA notice in the form of an audit issued by the Food Safety and Inspection Service. This development fascinates me. It touches so many issues that have been percolating through food production and food safety. First, there is a decade of maneuvering between the U.S. and China over meat exports in both directions. China, along with a number of other Asian nations, blocked U.S. beef imports in 2003 after Washington State cow tested positive for bovine spongiform mad cow disease. Then in 2004, avian influenza flared in Asia. The U.S. blocked imports of Chinese poultry. And in 2009, China bought a restraint of trade action against U.S. in front of the World Trade Organization. And it won in 2010 at about the same time that it accused the U.S. of dumping chicken parts at below market prices and slapped American poultry with tariffs of more than 100%. So this has been going on for a while. Do you want to read the rest of that? Do you feel up to it?
The audit process that approved the Chinese plants began after the WTO decision. The USDA inspected, asked for corrective actions, inspected again, and finally approved the deal on August 30th. The audit allows China to sell back to the U.S. only poultry that was raised and slaughtered in the U.S., or, as the audit documents say, a country that FSIS determined to have poultry slaughter inspection systems equivalent to the U.S. system. But the magazine The World Poetry notes, experts suggest that this could be the first steps towards allowing China to export its own domestic chickens to the U.S. Second, there are the most recent moves around ensuring that imported food is safe. Most of the food consumed in the U.S. is overseen not by the USDA, but by the Food and Drug Administration, which has been struggling for years with guaranteeing the safety of imports. Reports by the Government Accounting Office, the Office of the Inspector General, and the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Pew Charitable Trust and Center for Science and Public Interest all found that the FDA could not keep up with the task, estimating that its inspectors were able to lay hands on no more than 2% of imported foods. The Massive Food Safety Modernization Act tried to revamp the system for policing imports, which made up about 15% of the U.S. diet last July. Last July, the FDA proposed regulations under that new law, which said the best way forward was for companies handling imports to police their foreign suppliers themselves. The FDA rule is not final, but the USDA China audit seems to be following a similar pattern.
And third, there's the already contentious topic about country of origin labeling, known as COOL for short, COOL. Excuse me. The USDA has been implementing COOL for the past years. Requiring that retailers label meats, fish, and shellfish, fruits and vegetables, and some nuts, if they originated outside the U.S. Much of the U.S. meat industry has been fighting COOL in court. The most recent hearing covered by Food Safety News was August 27th. Yet, according to the USDA, the Chinese processing allowed under the new audit exceeds COOL requirements because no matter what is done in processing, the chicken meat originated in the U.S. Oh, my God. Oh, God.
What a mess, huh?
How neatly this spotlights the global nature of food production, especially the way that inexpensive transport has changed how food is raised and made. Just to reiterate what's going to be allowed, chickens raised in the U.S. or equivalent countries and slaughtered in the countries where they are grown are going to be shipped across the globe to be turned into processed products and then shipped back to be sold. Developing world labor and containerized shipping, so well explained by Roy George in a book, 90% of Everything, are both inexpensive and it is cheaper to send a chicken nugget around the world to be ground, formed, and breaded than to do that in the place where the chicken was raised. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that?
I do.
There's something wrong. Something so seriously wrong with this. It's going out of my mind. Is that possible?
Yep.
Yes, it is very possible. Something interesting here into global warming. right? No actually we're cooling, claim scientists. Yes. This is from the UK Telegraph. Global warming? No, actually we're cooling, claim scientists. A cold Arctic summer has led to a record increase in the ice cap, leading experts to predict a period of global cooling. And there has been 60% increase in the amount of ice covered with ice compared to this time last year, the equivalent of almost a million square miles. In a rebound from 2012's record low, an unbroken ice sheet more than half the size of Europe already stretches from the Canadian islands to the Russian North Shores, days before the annual refreeze is even set to begin. The Northwest Passage from the Atlantic to the Pacific has remained blocked by ice pack all year, forcing some ships to change their routes. A leaked report to the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, seen by the Mail on Sunday, has led some scientists to claim that the world is headed for a period of cooling that will not end until the middle of this century. If correct, it would contradict computer forecasts of imminent catastrophic warming. The news comes several years after the BBC predicted that the Arctic would be ice-free by 2013. Despite the original forecast, major climate research centers around now accept that there has been a pause in global warming since 1997. The original predictions led to billions in being invested in green measures to combat the effects of climate change. And the changing predictions have led to the UN's climate change body holding a crisis meeting. And the IPCC is due to report on this situation in October. A pre-summit meeting will be held later this month. But the leaked documents are said to show that the government who fund the IPCC are demanding 1,500 changes to the fifth assessment report, a three-volume study issued every 6 or 7 years, as they claim that its current draft does not properly explain the pause. And the extent to which the temperatures will rise with carbon dioxide levels and how much of the warming over the past 150 years of warming, a total of 0.8 centigrade, is down to human greenhouse gas emissions as key issues in the debate. The IPCC says it is 95% confident that global warming has been caused by humans, up from 90% in 2007, according to the draft report. They contradict the living hell out of everything that there is, you know? Does that make any sense to you? No. Right?
Not to me.
Not to me either. So it's just a crock. No. It's just a crock. Anyway, let us go.
And that was from the Telegraph?
Yeah, UK Telegraph.
There's some pretty good things on that site that I was looking at.
Yeah. Let me just read this one more because this is happening very shortly here. I don't know if you heard about this, but the Bikers for D.C. 9/11 rally, which is happening tomorrow. Come on, get up. Bikers for D.C. 9/11 rally denied ride through permits. Now Christian patriots and bikers band together. Okay. Bikers will join a million Christian patriot rally. Washington, D.C. has denied our permit for a no-stop ride through Washington, D.C. We find this regretful for the residents and businesses of that great area and humbly offer our apologies. What could have been a 1 or 2 hour ride through will now likely be an all-day event. And we will be obeying all laws. We will be stopping at all stop lights and stop signs and yielding to all pedestrians. But since the bikers are treated so unfair, we and co-organizers James Atkins of the Million Christian Patriot March have asked the bikers to join us, and their co-creator Belinda B. of the 2 Million Biker Rally have agreed. And make no bones about it, we support the bikers all the way. This could be the biggest patriot revival in the history of America. I am encouraging every American to join us on 9/11 in D.C. to remember the victims and their families. We must fight to save our republic, To find out more about the Million Christian Patriot and Now Biker Rally, visit our Facebook page, facebook.com, Million Christian Patriots March. That's interesting. I thought that was interesting. What do you think?
So the bikers were originally going to ride through on 9/11.
They are going to. There's still going to be one.
Okay.
But they were going to ride through, and this million Christian people were going to go there too. But now they're going to be 3 million. There's going to be 2 million bikers and.
But they were denied a permit,
right?
So they hooked up to a different group.
Yeah. So now they're all going to be together, which is kind of cool. Yeah, I thought. Which is cool. What else can I bring up tonight?
So that'll be tomorrow, actually.
That'll be tomorrow, yeah. Yep. So anyway, that's what's happening. I'm going to, you see that? I showed you that, right?
Mm-hmm.
A funny comic somebody sent us, and it's called twerking us for an approval on Syria seems a little desperate. They got Obama twerking a couple of congressmen there.
He's got one of those big fake fingers like Miley Cyrus.
And he's dressed like Miley Cyrus. He's moving his butt. Very funny. Guys are funny. So anyway, that's that for that. And I'm going to go over to another site. But before I do that, let's take a little much needed music break. And we'll be right back after this.
They're not. they become state gifts. It's not coming up.
No.
Interesting. They're going to take that one down, probably.
Probably are.
I'll just read a little bit.
Yes.
Foreign diplomacy doesn't always resolve world-class problems, but it sure does rake in the swag. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was given $500,000 worth of diamond and ruby jewelry by Saudi Arabian King Abdullah bin Abdul Aziz and received $58,000 worth of bling from Brunei. The lavish gifts were among a treasure trove of keepsakes bestowed upon the U.S. leaders in 2012. The State Department disclosed on Thursday.
Yeah. Keepsakes.
We can't get the whole article. It wouldn't come up.
Let's see if it comes up now.
Oh, here it is.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, not only are they getting a salary and all kinds of goodie bonuses and blah, 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 but they're getting paid...
Bribes.
For big bribes to do what they're doing. These guys are as deadly as... crooked as they get, you know. I can't believe anybody wants that horrible witch for to run for president. Ah, God, Hillary Clinton. Anyway, Russian President Vladimir Putin gave Clinton a $560 bottle of cognac, while President Obama received an autographed baseball from Chinese President Xi Jinping and a 41-inch. Saber from Mongolia. Right. Well, who'd want an autographed baseball from Chinese president? Okay. I don't think that would be worth too much.
No, I wouldn't want it.
Meanwhile, Vice President Joe Biden got a bare-breasted female bust from Liberia. Well, the Constitution prohibits U.S. government employees from keeping requests more than $350. But officials at the U.S. General Services Administration said the gifts were accepted to avoid awkward moments. And the GSA said some of the presents were donated and others were sold to the public.
Mm.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, let's see what else we get here. And we are going to go to... Let's see. APAC.
They've run over to Congress.
APAC takes the hill, yeah. And it just kind of tells you what kind of a joke it all is. But the next few days, and completely against the will of the American people, hundreds of APAC activists will raid the American Congress to push for war. Nothing new in that, but still, one question bothers me. How many of these pro-war Jews have sent their sons and daughters to serve in the American military? That's a good question. You feel like reading any of this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You just show me
that.
Bearing in mind that pretty much the same lobby pushed for the invasion of Iraq in 2003, one might wonder whether Jews were fairly represented in the military forces or in the casualty statistics of that military plunder. I guess they were not. It seems that the enthusiasm of the lobby in pushing for wars for America doesn't translate much into patriotism or sacrifice. The lobby indeed pushes for wars, but somehow it's always the Gentiles who do the killing and the dying.
We are the goyim, according to them. The goyim.
The pigs. In Britain, it's much the same. David Aaronovitch and Nick Cohen, both leading advocates within British media for intervention in Iraq in 2003, didn't use many column inches in the Jewish Chronicle persuading young Jews to join the British Navy or the SAS. Like their American counterparts, they believed that the moral intervention was necessary, but it was the Scottish, English, and Welsh boys and girls that took care of it for them. And what about arch-interventionist Bernard Henry Levy, the so-called philosopher who liberated Libya as a Jew, did he call for Jews to join the French legions? I don't think so.
Here we see a clear discrepancy between the contemporary Jewish right-wing appetite for immoral interventionist wars and general absence of patriotism among the Jewish masses. This surely demands an explanation. Is this really parasitic aggression or APAC's part? Do they really try to send America into a Zionist war, yet refrain from sending their kids to the same war? Or is it that APAC and the other belligerent Jewish lobbies are totally detached from the Jewish masses who are uninterested in these expansionist wars and violence? Or is it that American Jews don't mind one bit watching the Jewish lobby pushing for a war on their behalf, yet for obvious reasons they prefer to stay out of danger? And I don't know the answer to these troubling questions. I am neither a sociologist nor a political scientist, but I would suggest that APAC and the other Jewish lobbies are playing a very dangerous game that may put all American Jews in grave danger. If Jews are concerned about anti-Semitism, and they should be, they better take a look at APAC's actions and contemplate the possibility of catastrophic outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. It's called the Wandering Who blog. Kind of frightening.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's kind of true, and it's really. Why are they lobbying? Why do they lobby so hard for us to go to war all the time?
That's not a very good one.
Why do we do what we do? Be interesting.
Maybe.
Okay. Let's see. With the five big lies, Wickenfeld is producing. Okay. The five big lies, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody realizes that the world is awakening to things, and this is awakening. Waking times. Five big signs the global engine of deceit, lies, and control are coming to an end. Like that.
If you don't see it coming, you may not have been doing. You may not have been hiding in a very dark place for the last decade. The lies, deceit, fear-mongering, and illusions portrayed by elite controlling entities of the world are slowly crumbling right in front of their eyes as the world is awakening. Here are five signs that the era of deception and duplicity is coming to an end. Number one, pharmaceutical industrial complex has been exposed. Perhaps one of the biggest controlling entities of the world, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, who has deceived billions for almost two centuries. Their corruption, fabrications, and outright deceit has enveloped every nation on earth. In the last decade alone, millions have outcasted drugs and vaccines from their circle of trust. More people are coming to discover that this powerful group of criminals will stop at nothing to sell their snake oil to the public. Over the last several years, Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, and Novartis, and all other pharmaceutical giants, which seemed unassailable, slowly drowning. Drug discovery jobs have disappeared by the thousands in the U.S. and by the hundreds in Europe as the industry has cut costs in order to adjust what is widely perceived as the end of the blockbuster drug era.
People are getting it, from the H1N1 scandal to HPV, from Lipitor to Vioxx. The public is catching on that most modern-day diseases are man-made to sell us more poison in a vicious cycle which perpetrates until our death. Research is now slowly showing that natural health products are as effective as man-made drugs. And for the first time in history, the natural health industry is aiming to amend legislation to allow physicians to include natural health products in their practice, a change that could revolutionize the allopathic treatment model, right? Which is great, because I'll tell you, Lila and I have found a bunch of natural medicines that are just incredible. And the media is no longer capable of instilling trust. Recent polls now show that an overwhelming 80% of the population no longer trusts mainstream newscasts. From the lies and promotions of the war to our health, the mainstream media is incapable of generating any unbiased newsworthy content without corporate or government propaganda. Conan O'Brien easily revealed how mainstream media's scripted talking points are just a farce. This happened almost every day on an issue you can imagine across all networks at any time. The media, as they say, is a joke, branded to program minds of millions through manipulation and deception. But their dominion and monopoly has been thwarted by the alternative media, who are now fully engaged in exposing every lie one at a time, and we are achieving great success. Number three, the conventional food industry is collapsing. Isn't that good?
That's amazing.
By observing the chess match between anti-GMO camps and Monsanto and their lobbyists, we see a clear indication that big agriculture, biotech, and the entire food industry is in turmoil. Trade agreements currently being drafted in developed nations are attempting to secure legislation dictating all GMO labeling is illegal. Resistance against GMO are being defined as anti-free trade practices that governments are attempting to enforce in the form of economic sanctions against nations that attempt to ban GMOs. But labeling initiatives spawned by various groups are being exposed as controlled opposition, and the true intention and transparency of these organizations is inevitable. Food giants are being held accountable for their manufacturing processes, toxic ingredients, and lack of credibility. All of these things are sure signs that the biotech industry is losing control as the entire world is awakening to the dangers of genetically modified food and a conventional food supply. Technology is coming forward that will soon allow on-the-spot tests for environmental toxins, GMOs, pesticides, food safety, and more than their smartphones, and other handheld devices as a defiant public will stop at nothing to regain independence with the food industry.
The freedom movement is gaining momentum. De facto foreign administrations of unelected industrialists, financiers, academics, military leaders, along with representatives for our elected government officials, have been very, very busy the past century implementing changes into nations who were once sovereign and free. However, they have no real authority to restrict public mobility, free trade, or limit access to anything. That means that everybody is free to drive without insurance, driver's license, license plates, free to trade any articles of exchange, including vitamin supplements, healing modalities, and free to consume and ingest anything they wish without restriction. This is the right of all people born on any land, and the movement to educate millions on these issues is rising across the globe. Mass populations are starting to see the reality that there is no longer sovereignty within nations. The people of these nations have lost their ability to write their own laws, avoid arrest, injury, and damage from corporations which seek to remove all the freedoms from the people. The elite societies of the world are now petrified of the awakening of these fundamental human rights. This is the fear of every official who deems their opinion can be enforced over others through artificial laws that don't hold any weight in the highest courts. We are now declaring those rights more than ever and ever beneficiary of the corrupt system. We are now declaring those rights more than ever, and every beneficiary of the corrupt system is sending the police to assist. They were in the wrong and they are right. It is about knowing what absolute sovereignty truly is and embracing the power to express the right regardless of anybody else's interpretation. Police are being held accountable for these injustices, and their homes and possessions are being taken from them in the highest courts as the people fight for the rights to be free and will accept no damage by illegal enforcement in the interim.
That's That sounds well and good, but I don't know. We've still got a long way to go there. The liberation of nature, number five. Liberation of nature and abolishment of all things toxic is now inevitable. We've got a long way to go there, too. But
so I would agree with that.
But, it's at least the awakening is happening there. More than a dozen U.S. states have now completely decriminalized the act of possessing marijuana, and both Colorado and Washington have made it legal to possess, sell, transport, and cultivate the plant. But soon it may be legalized across the entire country. That is quite the 180 the federal government's doing in 2011 when they decreed that marijuana had no accepted medical use and should remain classified as a highly dangerous drug like heroin.
Yeah.
Nobody has the right to criminalize or restrict anybody from possessing a plant or smoking it for that matter. The rights of people to interact with nature are being recognized on all levels, and cannabis liberation is an amazing step forward. The restoration of clean drinking water through the removal of toxic fluoride is another example of how governments can no longer contain their lies. In this case, the 60-year-old deception of fluoride. Among the entire world, almost the entire world is now coming full circle to health consequences of poisoning the water supply with fluoride. Most developed nations, including all of Japan and 97% of Western Europe, do not fluoride their water. No kidding.
Huh.
Did you know that?
No.
Israel was recently added to that list. Many communities over the last few years stopped fluoridation in the U.S., Canada, New Zealand, and to Australia. Recently, both Wichita, Kansas, and Portland, Oregon rejected fluoridation 60-40%. And Hamilton, New Zealand, councils voted 7-1 to stop 50 years of fluoridation after councils listened to several days of testimony from those for the and against fluoridation. Windsor, Ontario stopped 51 years of fluoridation. 16 regional councils halted or rejected fluoridation in Queensland since mandatory fluoridation was dropped there in November 2012. The news is spreading and Renaissance is blooming worldwide. There is no stopping it. The potential war in Syria, which has no support from the American people, is a beautiful reminder that people are tuning into their own hearts and wisdom as they come to understand that war will never accomplish anything but create more war.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready, my friends, because we are headed for an incredible ride as we pave the way for a new consciousness as we rebuild the earth. Take back our power as united and free citizens of this wonderful planet. And that's what our friend...
Marco Torres is a research specialist, writer, and consumer advocate for healthy lifestyles. He wrote this.
And that's what our buddy George Dixon used to talk about. And unity consciousness, and that's expansion, and it's all happening. Well, just as he predicted. It really is happening. It started in 2012. And it's really just like it's at the end of 2012, and this year we've seen a tremendous boom, all over the world. And now it's suddenly coming to the United States.
Well, that would be nice.
It is coming to the United States. I'm seeing it. Lila, 13 years ago, Lila and I were banging heads against the wall trying to get out the word and show people what was happening on radio and television and websites and stuff. And we were laughed at, we were said, you're conspiracy people, and there's no such thing as chemtrails, and fluoridation in the water is good for you, and toothpaste, and all this stuff. And we said, no, it's not. And kept proving it why. And then finally, 13 years later, it's being proven everywhere.
Well,
isn't that exciting?
It's happening for everywhere. Lots of people have paved the way for this.
And, years ago, people didn't...
And there were people before us who caught on.
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, we learned from them,
Mm-hmm.
And, great.
And now it's that 100 monkeys effect.
100 monkeys effect, yeah.
You
exactly
know?
Right. That's
and
what they're saying.
More and more people are catching on. And they're realizing, how could we be so fooled?
Yeah.
How could we be so dumb? I mean, that's what I said to myself. How could I be so dumb?
Yeah.
Why did I believe all these things?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like when we know it's all wrong. mean, no.
And then
no.
You have Obama standing up there and saying,
oh,
the
good.
Way the way HIPAA vets are killing is to kill more people. Now, doesn't that make sense?
That's true. No, I haven't heard
the Constitution, ain't nobody got time for that shit. There's Obama sitting on a...
Syria is a money and power grab.
Uh-huh. All right, this is Luke Deska. We are Change.org. I'm here with Lee Kemp of LeeKemp.net. Now, Lee, very important question. Syria, what do we do? Do we bomb them or do we nuke them? What's the choice here?
I think the best choice is to bomb so that you kind of clear a path for the nukes. So we want to clear it out of, you know, women and children and anybody that, you know, screaming can be very annoying, all right? So just clear out all that, and then you go in with... No, it's am I allowed to criticize on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. It's fucking bizarre. It's absolutely a geopolitical move, a money grab, a power grab. Have you noticed that we only go in for humanitarian causes? We only go into countries that have a geopolitical significance or oil. I mean, those are the reasons that we go into these countries. All of a sudden, we care about humanitarianism, whereas people are dying on an endless basis. I mean, fucking the AIDS or Ebola destroying whole continents, and we don't give a shit until it's a place that we want some power, all right? So it's like a lifeguard being like, I'm here to save the day at the pool, and then you notice that he's only making out, he's doing mouth-to-mouth with all the hot chicks, whether they need it or not. Meanwhile, a bunch of obese, ugly guys are dying in the pool, drowning, and there's a whole pile of ugly dudes off to the side, just ugly corpses off to the side, and at some point you got to be like, I don't think this guy's here to save the day. I don't think that's his real reason. So that's how it is with us and humanitarian cause, humanitarian bombing. There's no such thing as humanitarian bombing, all right? It's like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron. And furthermore, and people can look this up, I did a video recently for Moment of Clarity. That's my web series. I did a video about this speech or interviews, many of them, that General Wesley Clark has done. This is a former NATO Supreme Allied Commander, former presidential candidate. This guy knows his shit. He said that he talked to many people at the Pentagon, and people at the Pentagon have told him that we, back in 2001, that we were going in to seven or upending seven countries, all right? And it's like Iraq, Iran, Lebanon, Libya, Syria, and almost all of them have come true. And so you look at that, and you're like, maybe there's another reason we're going into Syria. Maybe it's not really because we care about chemical weapons. Meanwhile, we've got weapons contracts for cluster bombs, which most countries have agreed to sign on something saying that's a war crime, saying cluster bombs are a war crime.
Yeah, we're giving $1 billion of cluster bombs to Saudi Arabia. We use white phosphorus. We use depleted uranium. There's a whole bunch of ugly fat guys all along the beach. I mean, it's so evident. It's so clear, and I think you just gave it a really good analogy. But my main question is, how do you find comedy in all this horrendous, horrible news? I mean, I find it, you know, it's even a struggle myself to stay positive. It's even a struggle myself to just keep happy and look at the brighter side of things. But comedy is a major force of that. How do you find that weapon within you to go into somewhere to make people laugh about all the horrible things that are going on?
I reject the premise. Whoever called me positive? No, I'm just kidding. But I see what you're saying, though. I'm not saying all my stuff has a positive message. Some of it does here and there, but I consider myself an optimist, a cynical optimist. I view the glass as half full of shit. But I think that comedy is actually an important weapon in this. It's not just to make it easier to go down. It also tricks a lot of people into listening. It tricks people that might not give a shit about this stuff, that might not think it's their thing to concern themselves with politics or concern themselves with what's going on in the world. And by making it funny, it's something more. There's something more there. You know, it's like putting it's like if you were on the newspaper. It's what the Fluffington Post does. They put like photos of side boob right there. So you're like, well, I came for the side boob, and oops, I learned something in one of the articles. Like it's similar with comedy. You put the jokes in there, and people are like, well, I came for because I was laughing, and then oops, I learned something.
Well, if you can laugh in the face of evil and all that power, you take away their strength. You really humanize them, and you really take away all the power that they really have. And I really thank you for that, because it's a very important tool.
Well, and the other thing, and actually this is more sad than it is something we should be happy about, but look at the people that you feel are really telling the truth on a lot of our airwaves. You know, it's like Bill Maher some of the time and Jon Stewart some of the time and Colbert. And some of these people are the ones willing to knock the knees out of the leaders. And whereas the corporate news channels, you don't get shit, you know. They're sitting there. I turned it on the other day. They were having their debate on Syria. And one of the guys, one of their shills, kept going, "I don't listen." And they kept the person arguing against kept bringing up Iraq. And he goes, "Listen, I don't think we should relitigate the Iraq war. Let's not relitigate." And the host, the corporate hack host, goes, "I agree. We shouldn't relitigate.
Let's not learn
relitigate.
From our mistakes."
Yeah, that's a euphemism. We can learn when you fucked up. That's all that is. Relitigate. Go fuck yourself. That's learning when you fucked up is now called relitigating.
Yeah, they're fancy terms.
That's what they
and
do.
It said,
it's like, you know, we've said this hundreds of times, but, you know, it's like if you go to YouTube and watch some of George Carlin's stuff, he was right on the money. He said 10, 15 years ago, and nobody said, and everybody said, "Oh, my, isn't he funny?" You know?
Huh.
But it's all happened. It all came real. So, anyway, we want to thank everybody for joining us, and join us tomorrow night.
Yep.
And
have a good night. Listen to what the speech is going to be. Fuck.